So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Keller Williams, Jacksonville Realty.
I do want to finish up with one note. You know, I want to call out the Dog Nation and call out all the fans, because you really think about the tremendous job and give them a thanks as we went across the country and played, literally across the country and played, and we went to Notre Dame and played on the road to Vanderbilt, played a lot of games where our fan base turned out and did a tremendous job of support. I think that really helped us with recruiting.
It's Florida State. What are we talking about? That's what I tell them. Because you argue. It's Florida State. You got a chance to play at Florida State.
Let's shift our focus now into developing the players, getting them ready to go. Spring practice coming up here around the corner. And, you know, before you know it, it's going to be time for the spring game. And you know, we need to pack the swamp for the spring game if we want to get ourselves back to the level we want to be at.
All right, Dan Mullen with some late signings for the Florida Gators. Came in late on a Wednesday afternoon. Kirby Smart talking about maybe the best class that Georgia has ever had. 7 5-star athletes, according to 24/7 Sports. And how about Willie Taggart just bragging on the Garnet and Gold? I've got to tell you what, I don't care if he goes 0-12 as a coach. It is so comforting to hear a guy love the school, love his opportunity, and not make it a bitch fest the way that Jimbo Fisher did over the last 8 years. Jimbo would have found a way to probably complain about something, probably put in some sort of dig or anything, but, you know, a positive vibe where he could have created a raise for himself. Willie Taggart laying it on the line, basically saying, this is Florida State. And, you know, I made the comment yesterday. I think if you analyze what he did, taking that group from 64th to 10th in about 6 weeks, I would expect, if you're an Ole fan, for Willie Taggart to have his team and that school ranked in the top three yearly in recruiting. I think he's that good. He takes advantage of social media. He is tireless on the road with his staff. Not saying he can coach. Not saying he's going to go out there and be the difference on Saturday in the fall. That we'll see. We don't know. I mean, I'm talking to an audience right now that didn't watch him a lot at South Florida, didn't watch him a lot at Oregon. We'll find out about that, but I'm talking about recruiting strictly. So I think it was a real good class for everyone around here. Of course, Miami had 20 early. They got three more yesterday, but the real story is what Georgia was able to do. All right, Blue and T-Wig, Joe Cowart momentarily. The show is produced by Agent Gibbs. Recruiting is in, recruiting is gone, and I don't want to take anything away from the kids that we had a chance to talk with yesterday, T-Wig, and how special it was for everyone across the landscape, but yeah. I had a little bit of an empty feeling last night. Again, I'm not a huge fan of change. I miss the first Wednesday in February and everything coming in at once. Yesterday was it was barely an appetizer for me.
Yeah, I think I broke it up into – I'm glad you used the meal reference. I broke it up into two meals. that's what I did with it.
Uh-huh.
I just think you got – the kids that did sign, they got more attention, because normally a kid would announce and nobody would really understand or know who the person is. I think what happened is you get a chance to get more attention on – the guys, you get more attention on the guys that did the first day and yesterday. You got to know them personally a little bit more than we normally would. I think the early signing period helped, like the kid we had yesterday, C.J. Smith. I think Minnesota realized what they had and what they didn't have and what they couldn't do, and that enabled them to say, you know what, let's go get this kid from Florida before he goes to another smaller school. But I think it helped some people. I do know that Nick Saban lamented it and didn't like it, because they were preparing for a national championship game, whereas Florida State was about Florida State was done playing, so they were recruiting like crazy, right? Texas A&M, we sat here and watched Texas A&M before the new year. Their game was over, so they could really get out there. Alabama was focusing on the national championship, and they really couldn't do anything till after January 8th.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So it's like that's what Saban is complaining about. But my thing with Saban is this. Are you seriously complaining? Would you switch places? Would you leave with blue blood and Alabama? And that the national championship game and the playoff, to me, that was the biggest advertisement you could get for a recruit.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah, I mean,
nobody else is playing, and you're the only game in town, so stop complaining.
Well, that's Nick Saban. I mean, Nick's never going to be happy. I think it's his way of proving to everyone that he's still on point. He's still sharp. He's not satisfied. I mean, after that sack, it looked like it was over and Bama was going to lose back-to-back national championship games. They pull it out. They win in overtime. And here he is going back to classic Nick Saban. He doesn't like the early signing period. He didn't feel he had an advantage to go out and do what he needed to do. And as you just pointed out, are you kidding me? He had the landscape where everyone involved in football was watching what was a phenomenal game. I mean, what a way to end the season in both college football mm-hmm. and the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You couldn't ask for a better way to end professional football and college football during the 2017-2018 playoffs to end both those games the way that they did. So that's just Nick Saban. And, you know, I listen to it and I just shake my head. And to me, it's nothing more than Nick being Nick.
Yeah. In the biggest game, in the game that everyone's watching, there are two teams playing, and you got a true freshman quarterback throwing to a true freshman wide receiver. And your true freshman running back led your team in rushing. And your other true freshman wide receiver, Henry Ruggs, caught a touchdown pass. There is no more selling your program to young kids than that, Rick.
I got you.
I mean,
and that's always been the case for Alabama in all these title games. They've always had true freshmen mm-hmm. that have come in and been able to get things done, participate, you know, in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson did the same thing when they won it a year ago.
That's
Florida
right.
State, same thing when they won it, what was it, 4 years ago. Whether it was Jalen Ramsey or Nate Andrews or Kermit Whitfield with the, you know, the kick return, that is a selling point. These true freshmen come in now and play. Every player that we talked with yesterday who joined us live out at Main Event said, no, forget about the red shirt. I want to play this year.
And you know what? I would think that every player wants that to happen. If I'm a coach, that's what I want to hear.
I do too.
I want every guy, without it seeming or coming across as being selfish, I want every single player that I recruit, if I were a coach, to look me in my face and say, I want to win, and I want to be the reason why we win. That's what you want to do. Because I think you can always pull somebody back, but you can't really light a fire up under people.
Yeah.
I give you a push, but I can't pull you. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I know what you're saying. When I first started getting into recruiting, I didn't know anything about college football recruiting the first 18 years of my life in Boston. I had no idea what it was about. I mean, the story around there was that Doug Flutie was offered one scholarship. Boston College. Again, that's a pro town. College football recruiting? That was in page 16 of the Boston Globe. I got to Tallahassee and I learned the new way of life and how important it was. And you go back to the late 80s and really through the decade of the 90s, for the most part, I mean, Florida State, Miami, Georgia, all these schools, they were bringing in 25 kids and you may have played 3 to 4, possibly 5 true freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were an offensive lineman or a quarterback, you didn't have a chance of playing. You were automatically going to be a red shirt. I mean, there's no way. I remember talking to the Lemmings and the Buckhalters and the Emfingers and all of these guys, Tom Barrows, and they would say, the hardest position for you to learn and come in and match strength immediately as an 18-year-old was the offensive line. And mm-hmm. you never had true freshmen. Tony Boselli didn't play as a true freshman.
No.
He backed up Harlow at USC.
You're
and
right.
He wasn't even a huge – he was only a 2 or 3-star recruit out of Colorado.
Tony was a 2-star guy.
Yeah, but these guys came in and they never played as true freshmen on the offensive line.
If you recall, Bobby Bowden, his whole thing was, we're going to redshirt you. And you ain't going to play until you're a redshirt sophomore. Look at Charlie Ward and look at Danny Cannell.
They didn't play until redshirt junior years.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be on campus for 3 years before you got a snap.
Sure. I mean, Peter Tom Willis, Danny Cannell, Thad Busby. You went through that whole line of quarterbacks.
Brad and Casey.
They all did it that way, and it got broken when Jared Jones was thrown out of school for marijuana, and that's where they were forced to go to Chris Ricks, who was a redshirt freshman. That broke a string of well more than one decade where they were going with redshirt juniors as starters at quarterback.
Going back to Danny McManus.
I gotta just mention something here.
What happened?
Joe Cowher in this oatmeal in this red mug. I mean,
he's redefined his body.
Bro, I guarantee you, if I go to an amusement park and it's 8 o'clock in the morning and Cowher's there, he's on a roller coaster eating oatmeal out of this red mug.
It's like a grape oatmeal, isn't it?
It's purple.
It's blueberries, yogurt, and oatmeal. And I always tell you guys, it's the only healthy thing I eat all day.
You need to wash that down one of those old school Fanta grape sodas. You remember those?
Yeah,
they were great.
I used to get them at the hockey rink when I'd play at 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning, and you know the game would be over by 7 because you got 1 hour ice time. It'd be 14 degrees in Boston, and I'd be asking my dad, hey, Dad, can I have one of those Fanta grape sodas at 7 a.m.?
They were so
cheap.
Doing
nothing better.
Remember the Czech colas and the Fantas? You could go get the grape, the orange. And just kind of
remember the old school bottles? Remember the old school bottles that weighed about a pound and a half? I mean, those old Coca-Cola bottles?
Yeah, we used to go and collect so we could go turn them in.
Turn them in.
Candy,
I remember
and all
it was
that.
A nickel. It went from a nickel to a dime. Yeah. As a matter of fact, y'all just did something. Okay, text line today.
Uh-oh.
The go-to candy, I don't care how old you are, the one, don't mention three, the one candy you could not do without as a kid.
I'm going to stay with Snickers. I've been consistent with that for 50 years.
I'm with the Apple Jolly Rancher.
Aren't bad. The lime one, even kind of like
the green one.
Those are pretty good.
I've always been a Baby Ruth guy.
I can't go hard candy. I need chocolate.
Okay. There you go. Old school candy. I know somebody's going to throw the Grape Nihilator out. They got to do that.
Well, I do remember the RC Cola, the Fantas, the Chex.
Orange Crushes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All those knockoffs, too, that you could
get. Like the local grocery store?
Yeah, that was
store.
When Dixie was the Czech Cola. It was as cheap and bad as it could be.
You could get like a case for a buck.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
It was generic soda.
The peach and the pineapple, man, y'all brought it back. You know, I'm looking at this parade on TV, Joe, because you and I, we have an affection for Xfinity Live.
Love that place up there in Philadelphia.
It's unreal. Rick, it's the most unreal bar you've ever seen. It's like a bar inside of a bar.
On Broad Street?
Oh, it's down by the stadium. It's in the sports complex.
There were a dozen bars inside it.
They're expecting 2 million people to participate in this parade.
And Lane Johnson promised a Bud Light for everybody, and they said they're going to show up at anyone over 21. They want a free beer, they're going to get it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, but not there. Not in Philly. I'm wondering what the hell's going to happen up there, but... Can you imagine? Jacksonville has, what, like 1 million people?
Yeah, 1.3 million, something
million
like
some
that.
Change.
2 million people. Mm-hmm. Philly's unique because they got like 2 skylines. Joe, they got like 2 downtowns.
Well,
they got the one down by the stadium, and then you ride where we were. There's a whole nother downtown. It's like having 2 different downtown areas in one city. It's crazy.
I really did like the look and feel of it. It surprised me.
Philadelphia?
Because I've been there 4 or 5 times, but mainly stayed in the suburbs and didn't spend as much time.
I've never been
area.
In the burbs. I've never been in Philly's burbs. I've always stayed smack dab in the middle of the city.
But I came away.
Broad Street's a lot of fun.
Yeah, which we did not make it to have a good time on Broad Street, but we were down there in the downtown, you know, not that far away. I think we were probably, 10, 15 blocks from Broad Street, something like that.
Not sure. All right, we got a lot to do today, though. We are rolling through this Thursday afternoon. Midday Chalk. We'll get things started next.
That just happened. Brought to you by Fidelity Bank.
All right, NBA trade deadline, 3 o'clock today. We have a big trade that has just come out in the NBA. The Cavaliers are sending Isaiah Thomas, Channing Frye, and Cleveland's first-round pick to the L.A. Lakers for Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance.
So it's really official now. The Boston Celtics absolutely won that trade. Everyone thought that Boston gave up too much when they gave up Jay Crowder, IT. IT's gone now. So basically, what the Boston Celtics did in the offseason was, instead of taking Ball or the kid that's hurt right now in Philadelphia, they took the best player in the draft in Jason Tatum, and then they traded for Kyrie.
Having a nice year. Jaylen Brown's having a nice year.
I can just say this
year
about Isaiah Thomas, IT4, for that great little special time that he had in Boston. Since then, he's been exposed and exposed for maybe a couple of different things. And I liked watching him, but he was a liability on one side of the floor before, magnified now because there weren't, not as many guys doing more things. But anyway, He's a pinball now, I think, in the NBA. He's just going to be all over the place.
Yeah, a lot of little interesting stories through that whole thing with the Paul Pierce retirement and how Isaiah Thomas kind of wanted his own night. And, you know, he'd only been there 3 years. Again, he was just phenomenal. I mean, everyone in Boston loved watching that kid play.
Yeah, and Pierce got beat up for that for no reason. Because
Pierce really did. I mean, Pierce actually deserves his own night.
Yeah, he deserves it. But they actually offered IT4 his own night. But IT4 said because he wasn't playing.
Yeah, he wanted demands.
And he wanted his family to be there. Yeah. So then they had to reschedule it and put it on Paul Pierce's night. Pierce was like, no, I don't care if you're playing or not. Play his damn video while you're sitting on the bench.
If someone's going to give you a night, you accept the terms. You say yes or you say no. I think I told you guys 2 years ago, not last year, but 2 years ago, I go to a Bruins game. Every year, I'm planning on going this Saturday and Tuesday when I'll be back home visiting my parents and my sister and her family. I went to a Los Angeles Kings Bruins game. The Bruins scored 1-0. The Kings scored 9 unanswered goals. And it was a 9-1 final. Mm-hmm. But that night, they honored Milan Lucic, who had a phenomenal career in Boston. He was kind of a poor man's Cam Neely. He was part of that Stanley Cup winning championship, and they had an honor for him, you know, a 5-minute tribute with a video presentation. Who has ever made a demand? Nah, I don't want it tonight. Uh-huh. Let's do it later when I can bring family in and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know.
I just think if they do plan something, and again, you could throw darts at the decision that the franchise made, the planning, and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I would think be happy.
But what this does for me though, this is not an anti-LeBron thing, because what I'm going to spit are straight facts. I'm going to channel my inner Jalen Ramsey here. Mm-hmm. Anton Jameson was a 21 point player in Washington. They traded for him to come to Cleveland. He couldn't play. Chris Bosh, 24-12 in Toronto, goes to Miami. He's 16 a night. Can't play, and he's always the reason when people point to, they say, Bosh needs to pick it up. LeBron needs help.
Clearly the third option on that.
Right. Kevin Love, 26 and I think 14, led the league in rebounding. 26, 14, 26, 15, or whatever it was. Played on the Dream Team, okay? Actually saved them in a game against Spain because he kept getting second rebounds when they were down. Yeah. And guys were missing
good
shots.
Rebounder.
Comes to Cleveland, 18, 19 points a game. People say, nope, can't play. IT4, 29 points a game, top 3 MVP, goes to Cleveland, can't play, cancer. So when everyone says LeBron needs help, be careful what you ask for when you go you cherry pick and go get a guy that's an all-star and he comes there and for some reason when he's on that team with him, they're not doing the same thing they did somewhere else.
I just think we've seen enough evidence. I marvel at LeBron's athletic ability. He is a one of a kind. But I think we have seen enough evidence to where he wants the spotlight to continually be on him, and he doesn't necessarily want shared credit going to anybody else. And the big three, it worked a couple of times, and he's played in what now? Was it 7 straight NBA finals or 6 straight? Whatever it was. And of those, he won 2 down there and 1 up in Cleveland. And I just think he's stubborn enough to be exposed to where he can't go and group players together and be unselfish. He's unselfish at times on the floor, but not when it comes to the storyline.
And I don't think he
But outside of injuries now, what does this do for Cleveland? What are they at best? 3? I watched Toronto murder Boston tonight.
They're a 3 or a 4 seed.
Yeah. Tuesday night. I watched Toronto just destroy the Celtics.
They're 7-13 in their last 20 games.
Yeah, and I always like to say...
Yeah, but they have the ability to turn on late, or would have before this trade. I mean, are you saying... Right now that the Eastern Conference comes down to either Toronto or Boston?
That's what I say.
Pretty much.
Because Cleveland has one major deficiency. They absolutely do not play defense, and at times look like they don't even try.
Yeah, Toronto's scary, well, man. I tell you what, they were scary the other night when I watched.
Okay, so you go into the postseason, and you do see, like we have often seen, an uptick in play. More seriousness dedicated to the game as opposed to what might happen in the regular season. But in this case... Cleveland is Cleveland. They're exposed. They are not the same team that has gone to the NBA Finals the last 3 seasons with LeBron. They don't play defense. They don't have what it takes chemistry-wise to get it going. Now, Toronto's been a team before where they actually were exposed in the postseason. Remember DeMar DeRozan just kind of disappeared?
Mm-hmm.
I do think that's a different type of team right now that will be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, with football now officially over, we'll begin to turn our attention to the NBA. I feel like I've been on college hoops all along. I watched both games last night. In college hoops, before you know it, March Madness will be here. Of course, it's a much longer season in the NBA, but we have that to dive into now after this trade. We also, we got to get back to some NFL today, and including the very latest on the Colts, what they're doing. And how about all these rumors that are out there now that Gronk is going to retire and is going straight to Hollywood to make action films?
He could make a lot of money. He could make a lot of money. And you have to weigh what you love the most, what type of career you want to have when you look back, the risk of injury. You got to weigh all that against, I've already made a star out of myself, and this star will travel. I can head to Hollywood, get in front of the screen, not get hit. I get a stunt guy to come in anytime anything crazy happens. So I could see the scenario where that happens, but I actually see that 3, 4, 5 years down the road.
Yeah, I just don't – I don't picture him
– I don't think
how do I want to – how do I want to say this? I don't think he has the intelligence of, let's say, like what The Rock has been able to do. When The Rock left wrestling, I was like, all right, he's going to be the same role in every movie. The Rock's turned into a pretty good actor, man. He's funny. I mean, I watch Ballers. I've seen him in all these – that latest Baywatch movie that came out. The guy was hilarious in that movie. Rock has turned into a pretty good actor. Now, listen, I'm not turning him into Denzel Washington or Robert De Niro, but he has put together a real nice career. How many of these former athletes it has failed for him? Jim Brown, Jesse Ventura.
Well, Brown did okay. He asked, but the other key here –
Fred Williams is probably the best who comes to mind for me.
The key here, though, is that they could make more money in Hollywood then compared to what they were making in the NFL.
O.J. Simpson was actually not a bad actor.
No, not bad.
If you think about it. Well, he was pretty funny in The Naked Guns and
the overall celebrity like of him is where he peddled a lot of dollars.
But, he played himself in a lot of movies.
The thing about The Rock is The Rock reaches guys like The Rock. Females definitely like The Rock. Kids like The Rock. The movie Jumanji, I think he's like $80 million, in like 1 week or something like that. So he can do a lot of things. He can be the kindergarten cop type dude. He can be a school teacher. He can be in a kiddie movie. He can be a single parent dad and with a daughter and trying to do her hair and people will think it's funny. He can be a cop. He can be a bad guy. He can be a former soldier. He can be everything. So he has an appeal to a lot of different people, man.
And when they get into that production side of it, the money, the producer, executive producer and all that, they print some cash. So I do think that's out there in front for Gronk later.
Well, it's a chance for him to get paid without risking his body.
Yeah,
I think he's beat up.
He's 29. Really, he's been injured head to toe.
But has he done enough to be a Hall of Famer?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you look at the amount of games, and he's right there to me. As the Gale Sayers of that era, in my opinion, he's the best tight end that we have ever seen in a short period of time. And the numbers won't support it because he's been injured too much. But has there ever been a red zone target? Who's the best tight end?
I think Tony Gonzalez is the best tight end.
Well, there's longevity, and he was very good.
And Gonzalez did everything. He blocked, he caught it, he ran. He was very athletic because he was a basketball player. Mm-hmm. I think Tony Gonzalez is the best tight end I've ever seen. The best tight end I've ever seen in a short period of time was Mark Bavaro. But it was a different era. Bavaro was the cold truth. He was a Redskin killer.
Yeah, but didn't move as fast, maybe.
No, he wasn't as fast, but he used to catch the ball down the seam a lot. Yeah. They weren't a throwing team. They ran the ball.
He was a big, burly guy.
Kellen Winslow, a senior.
Yeah, he was great.
He was phenomenal. He was tremendous. And so, you're talking about greats when we started having that conversation.
I mean, Jason Witten, who's playing right now, will go down. I mean, those are longevity guys.
Yeah, I think Witten is more of a longevity guy than anything. Gonzalez was like leading. I think he led the league in catches.
I mean, Tony Gonzalez will be
like
first.
He's third in receptions.
He's the first ballot Hall of Famer.
Like that,
he's in next year. He's in this year, I should say 2019, and he will get in first ballot. I think Gronk, when you pile up the games, he's probably going to be third all time behind only Gail Sayers and Dwight Stevenson. I don't know how many games Gronk has played, but I do believe he is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, what's funny is because he's a skill position player, it'll be a quicker argument to get him into the Hall than say, Tony Boselli.
He's going to be the only other Hall of Famer. You know, Randy Moss, but he only gave it a couple of years. I mean, when I think Randy Moss in Hall of Fame, I don't think at all the New England Patriots. I don't know about you, too.
I think Minnesota.
Yeah, I do, too. But, I mean, I think the only three Hall of Famers that you're going to get out of that, you know, that great run by New England is Tom Brady, Gronk, and Adam Vinatieri, who's going to actually end up playing more years with the Colts than he did with the Patriots.
That is hard to believe when you say that, because I didn't even realize the numbers added up that way, but that's pretty incredible. And then let's just say Edelman comes back, you know, that type of guy, where does he rank? Where does those types of guys rank? We'll do the NBA, we'll do the NFL, the Kirk Cousins conversation, definitely need to get into that a little bit today. Thanks to the Golf Club of Southampton. I went there yesterday, and Rick can appreciate this. They are doing a major improvement in their driving practice area, their whole range, completely redoing that bad boy, expanding it to about three times the size practice area that it was before. It'll rival anything that we've got on the First Coast, so it's really looking cool. Golf Club of Southampton, you can still get out there and play as they go through their practice grounds. 287 play. Make sure you get on the tee and check them out.
Definitely looking forward to visiting over there as a member. I have not played golf since late July, and I'm getting ready to pick that sport up again in the very near future. Also, thank you to Remedy today. Listen, it's pretty simple, ladies and gentlemen. Whether you need a full-time employment or part-time employment, it's as simple as contacting the folks right now at Remedy. They have jobs available all throughout Jacksonville. Let's say you live in the west side. Well, they got companies there. South side, the beach, north side. It doesn't matter. You don't have to travel from point A to point B. It's not all, I mean, that's the one thing about Jacksonville. It takes you, what, 15, 20, 25 minutes, 30 minutes to get everywhere, right? Well, not with Remedy. Just go to Remedy Staff, remedystaffjax.com to get all the details if you are looking for work. So when we come back, we'll take a look at that as far as the NFL is concerned. We'll also review signing day 2018. That is coming up on Midday Chalk.
Josh called me, made a decision. He's not coming. I don't deal with New England. I have no idea what they're thinking.
In a sense, do you feel betrayed?
No. People make decisions. People tell people no every day. They tell people no every day. And that's his prerogative, and that's his choice. And he chose the path. He chose not to be an Indianapolis Colt. That's okay. We'll move forward.
Has Josh reached out to Mr. Irsay directly?
I don't have knowledge of that.
All right, guys.
Thank y'all.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
The rivalry is back on.
That's Chris Ballard, not happy in Indianapolis, deservedly so, after being left at the altar by Josh McDaniels. What is next for the Colts? Well, Frank Reich, who had tremendous success, offensive coordinator in Philadelphia, Leslie Frazier, a former head coach, also Dan Campbell, who had an interim run in Miami in 2015, where he went 5-7. Currently, Campbell is the Saints' assistant head coach, also does work with the tight ends. Reportedly, he interviewed yesterday with Indianapolis. All right, which direction do the Colts go in now?
I think they should make a run at Dave Taub, or Tube, however you say his name.
I'm going to go with Taub.
Special teams coordinator?
Special teams coordinator for Kansas City. People have been raving about him. That's the path that John Harbaugh went. They could do that and then go hire a really, because he won't call plays, then go get a supreme play caller. To run your offense, make him assistant head coach of the offense.
Well, you got
someone that's very innovative.
Got Dan Campbell, Leslie Frazier, a couple of other guys that have been mentioned. Campbell, remember, he kind of stirred the emotion of a player down there in Miami when he was the interim guy, and they certainly got some recognition for doing that. But then it also didn't last very long. I don't know him as an X and O guy. Leslie Frazier has had a chance before. I don't think that's a bad idea to look at an experienced guy like that. I don't know whether they gave him enough time in Minnesota. It was just kind of a confounded thing up there. But I do think Leslie Frazier is a guy that should be given some serious consideration.
Yeah, I like Leslie. I probably wouldn't go in that direction, although I'm all for the minorities getting shots. And I don't think a guy just because he didn't do good the first time, that means he's automatically not going to do good the next time. The defense coordinator for the New Orleans Saints was the guy that got fired right before Jack Del Rio in Oakland. What's his name?
Dennis. Oh, yeah.
Dennis Allen.
Nice job.
He did a good job this year, and I think he'll end up getting another shot somewhere.
Yeah. If you're going to talk about what happened in New Orleans, part of the story is the Ingram-Kamara combination, but also the part of the story is the defense, really.
That's what they were missing all of those years when Brees was throwing for 5,000 yards. They couldn't stop anybody.
That's why I called Sean Payton half a coach, greatest half a coach you've ever seen, and now he finally realized, play a little D, man. Play a little D and run the football, and if you've got Drew Brees, you're not going to waste him. They made it, and they won a Super Bowl title back in the 2009, but since then they haven't been able to get deep enough.
I believe next year the NFC is going to be so good because I do think, as I mentioned, Minnesota, New Orleans, and Atlanta, especially Atlanta and New Orleans, they're probably, and Gibbs, this is a compliment, by the way, they're probably kicking themselves. Atlanta had Philly beat, bro.
Yeah, they did.
They had them.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans had Minnesota beat, and New Orleans would have gone to Philly and gave them everything they wanted.
Yep.
But Atlanta had them. I think Keanu Neal drops the ball.
Right. You can point to two plays in those games that had everything.
And
to do with
Julio Jones makes that grab 99 out of 100 times.
Yeah, he really does. Yep. This is the first time you've ever seen Julio looking just a little awkward and not getting the hands up. It was actually the hands were up.
He
just
fell. He fell and tried to get up and
tried
catch
to come back up.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the AFC is going to as a whole is. The top side of it is going to be weaker. I expect the Jaguars to be better. That doesn't mean it's going to translate to W's and L's. I think they'll be a better overall team. But I expect New England not to be nearly as good. They've got some older players. They've got some serious free agents. And you look at all the stories now that are out there, like with Gronkowski and some others. I mean, who knows what's going to happen in Pittsburgh with Le'Veon Bell and, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. There's always a threat there that this could be his final year or he could walk away. So, you know, typically over the last decade or so, when you think of the AFC, the two teams that stick out more than any are the Patriots and the Steelers. I think those teams are going to be down a notch from this past year. I think the Jaguars can rise. I think the entire AFC South will rise this year. And, you know, this was kind of the doormat conference or the doormat division within the AFC conference over the last decade. I think heading in, they got a chance to be much improved. The real story in Indy, of course, is what is going on with Andrew Luck. And during this same press conference, Chris Ballard had a lot of positive things to say about Andrew Luck, because that was one of the ways of thinking about Josh McDaniels as to why he didn't take that job. Was he given some information that maybe Luck would not be able to come back? Apparently that's not the case. He's not going to need surgery.
And Ballard wanted to make that point, although he also said he hasn't thrown the football yet. And I don't think it's that big of a deal. But we are talking about, if you keep this timeline together, and I used to a season ago during the offseason,
mm-hmm.
So a little less than a year ago, because you get the OTAs rolling and all that kind of stuff, I kept mentioning Andrew Luck and Cam Newton in the same sentence. Both of these guys are coming back from shoulder surgery. We don't know what the and we don't know the seriousness of it, the level of all that stuff. Well, guess what? Cam Newton came back and was no problem, and then Andrew Luck ended up having to keep pushing back the date, and then ultimately on IR to Europe and back.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going to happen?
Well, one of the things about the Colts situation for McDaniels is this: even if he doesn't have Luck, there's another guy on the roster that knows his offense, Brissett.
Yeah,
and that's a different situation.
At least,
he would have known from day one everything about Josh McDaniels' offense. So
might have been in a position to flourish compared to what he was
sort
doing
of the way
year.
Nick Foles did. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be a real interesting run here for Andrew Luck, including going to the Netherlands to begin or continue his rehabilitation. Chris Ballard talked about his quarterback.
Let's talk about Andrew, because there's a lot of rumors. Everybody's an expert. Everybody. Mm-hmm. is an expert on this right now. And all we can do is, number one, I'm going to listen to Andrew Luck, who I absolutely believe in and trust. I'm going to listen to the doctors that he is talking to and dealing with. And I'm going to listen to the guy that's training him right now. And at this point, we feel very strongly that Andrew's in a good place. He doesn't need surgery.
All right. And you know, he's missed 26 games over the past 3 years. Apparently, he's got something going on in the Netherlands where he spent 6 weeks rehabbing. He did that a year ago at this time, really late January, or late December into January, into the middle part of February. There's some talk that he is possibly going to be headed back there, but it's all going to come down to when is this guy able to throw the football. We don't typically talk about arm problems like this in football. We do in baseball all the time. Tommy John surgery will set you back for a year. Typically, quarterbacks, I mean, you're hurt. If you need surgery, you get it taken care of. You go through the rehabilitation, and you come back out and play. But it does beg the question, what happened? When they went in there the first time, did they not do a good enough job?
That's the fear.
Why has he not been able to respond?
That's the fear for me, is that you have heard horror stories about those types of procedures that haven't gone well, and you've lost a major amount of time, more damage to the labrum, shoulder, that whole area. And you're talking about Andrew Luck, who's making his living throwing about, 10,000 passes a year, something. I don't think I'm exaggerating too much. And so he's got to be able to do that. And look at the amount of wear and tear that they put on their body already. And then if you don't have one that's working properly, how much worse it can be. And remember when Peyton Manning was going through those neck procedures and Indianapolis didn't want to let it get out. And then ultimately it came out that he went through a total of 4 fusion surgeries.
I think Luck is so young and that team and that roster isn't built. I think what might be going on too is they want to make sure they get this right, because if they he'll play
for $100 million they put into him.
Yep, and he'll play for 10 years, as opposed to constantly, especially with a bad roster, having him out there and he's always, you know, going through issues. When I hear about guys going to Europe, though, I automatically think of stem cell.
You think of stem cell?
That's what Kobe did.
Yeah, and the doing the blood platelets and all that kind of stuff,
injecting it right back in and all of that stuff. I don't want to sit here and sound like a surgeon, but that's what they do. Whenever you hear guys going overseas, they're going to get procedures done that aren't approved in America.
Remember, Eldrick was involved in some of that stuff when they were talking about the one doctor from from Canada.
Yeah, you heal quicker.
Yeah,
apparently, and it worked. It worked for Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, well, stem cells real. Okay, it works.
It's just that here they think you're opening up Pandora's box and cloning and all of that stuff. So that's that's why it's not approved here in America.
Yeah. Well, certain things a stem cell is, are, but not what you're talking about.
You know, I don't – even though that you had the Peyton Manning thing with New England and, you know, Jim Irsay or whatever, I don't think of the Colts as the big rival for the New England Patriots. I think the Jaguars have a bigger rivalry. And they should, being in the AFC South, going back to, you know, again, Bill Polian and him getting upset about Jacksonville, you know, whatever he was doing on the sideline or whatever. I mean, to me, that's more of the rivalry. Really, the only thing that Indy did, because I, you know, let's face it. I mean, Manning won again in Denver in the AFC Championship game. But except for that game where they came from down 18 points at the RCA Dome, really Tom Brady in New England did dominate. There was that fourth down call with Kevin Falk, but they really dominated that rivalry.
By and large.
But I think for 10, 12 years, at least 10 years,
it
was New England and the Colts.
That was it. Kind of like
– Jacksonville hasn't been good enough to really rival. And Indy used to beat Jacksonville all the time.
Well, Indy beat everybody.
Yeah.
Okay? So they won that AFC South division title over and over and over and over again.
That switched recently.
And so it has. But if I'm looking at the Patriots right now, the closest rival that they've got is maybe Pittsburgh, who they've had.
And they don't play them very much.
But they have had some epic games, and they meet in the postseason and all that kind of stuff. But
Miami gets them down.
Yeah, definitely gets them down there in South Florida. So there's some good ones there. But all Ballard's trying to do right now is fire up.
Exactly what he's doing.
His side of this. That's really all he's trying to do right
and
now.
And I really appreciate what he did yesterday. It was anything but boring. It was anything but what the common general manager has to say. He put his emotions into that. He is bitter right now. He is upset. We'll see what they end up doing. Again, they've already have. It's been announced that they're pursuing 3 coaches. It could be more. One that we know is definitely already interviewed. That's Dan Campbell. He did so yesterday. He is the assistant head coach and tight ends coach. But Yeah, he's a bitter man right now, and he should be after what Josh McDaniels
did. Because he just got absolutely spurned.
Can I read this quote?
Yeah.
And to tease this on the other side? I'm going to read a quote. Listen, winning one SEC championship game doesn't make you a dominant program. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
In two of the last 3 years, we've been to the SEC championship game.
Jeez.
So even a blind squirrel finds a nut
every
once in a while.
Enter Dan Mullen, ladies and gentlemen.
Dan Mullen talking about the University of Georgia.
Throwing some shade at those dogs. All right?
Let's get into
That's called signing day shade right there.
Let's get into it a little bit. If you can, you do. And then when you can't do it anymore, you don't. It's as simple as that. Midday Chalk.
Midday Chalk on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
First season for you in the recruiting trail, and now you'll turn the page and move forward.
That's what it is. You know, I mean, right now you get the opportunity, all the coaches, you know, we'll give them, a 48 hours off to go see their family real quick. But let's get back and get to work, get around our players. Let's get into the offseason program. Let's shift our focus now into developing the players, getting them ready to go. Spring practice coming up here around the corner, and before you know it, it's going to be time for the spring game, and we need to pack the swamp for the spring game if we want to get ourselves back to the level we want to be at.
Dan Mullen, coach of the Florida Gators, another comment from him that we'll get into coming up here in just a second. But he tried to haul in his first class as the Florida Gator head coach, and we'll go through that one and the other ones as well as National Signing Day is in our rearview mirror. Thanks to the Golf Club of Southampton, one of our sponsors today. Make sure you check them out, especially when you're thinking about putting a group together, getting out there, having some fun. 287 Play Golf Course is looking great. Greens are fast. So make sure you check them out. 287 Play and the huge practice area improvement well underway and should be done by early March.
Yeah, sounds good. Really want to help you out if you are listening right now and you're in need of a job. All right, whether it's full or part-time employment, the folks at Remedy are just phenomenal. All right, go ahead and visit them, or better yet, just go to remedystaffjax.com. They have top companies, jobs all throughout Jacksonville, and they have jobs near where you live. So you don't have to go from the south side to the north side. I mean, there's a job relatively close to where you reside. For all the details, whether it's full or part-time, just go to remedystaffjax.com. All right, T-Week read the quote from Dan Mullen. Some serious shade. Even though he didn't call out the dogs, you don't have to be Matt Patricia, a.k.a. a rocket scientist, to figure out that he was referring to Georgia.
Yeah, he was. Listen, winning one SEC championship game, he said, doesn't make you a dominant program. You know what I'm saying? That was a little – he was channeling his little Doug Marrone right there. He went on to say – in two of the last 3 years, we've been to the SEC championship game, so even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
There's no doubt that that rivalry is still alive.
It was. It remains. But here's what as far as just trying to – hey, Dan, did you see what Georgia hauled in on recruiting or on National Signing Day with all their prized recruits? Did you see them play Alabama? So I would tip my cap to Georgia for what they have done here and what they may be doing in the coming years. But Dan Mullen needs to be able to have that confidence to get Florida in a position to where they need to be able to beat the big boys once again. Hadn't been able to do it in a while. Losing year after year to Florida State, losing to Georgia this past year, going and having 50-plus hung on you by Alabama when you made it to the SEC championship game. Now, none of that was on Dan Mullen. But now Mullen's got to prove that he has the attitude and the belief that he can get that football team back to where they need to be.
I like it.
Yeah.
You know what? Why not? It's play to your fan base.
Yeah.
If Georgia needs this quote, where, again, the team isn't even mentioned, but if Georgia needs this quote for that game that's going to be played here in late October, then – that's an issue. I have no problem trying to create a little something with your fan base. Put in all of this conversation is the one thing. What? We need the place to be packed for the, what is it, orange and blue game that's coming up in mid to late April, whenever it is. That was his bit. We need this place packed. Come on out and support this team. I actually admire what Dan Mullen has said.
That just happened. Happen. Brought to you by Fidelity Bank.
I know we're talking football, and we'll get right back to it, but this NBA thing is moving real fast. Cleveland has fired back. Cleveland has now acquired both Rodney Hood from Utah and George Hill from Sacramento. So the take for Cleveland today is Rodney Hood, Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson, and George Hill.
Okay, that's, and then
they it's all new cast.
They didn't have to give up anything other than the first round that they sent to the Lakers, which could be a little bit higher than maybe originally thought, but they're hanging on to that.
And I haven't seen what they actually gave up, but looking at the positions, I'm sure it has some Amon Shumpert and some of those guys, and Tristan Thompson probably is gone too. I'll check it out. But
they were trying to get him, deal him for DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, he makes too much money.
Yeah, exactly.
He makes almost $20 million.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It really is. I thought he would be much better. Hey, we asked about your favorite candy as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a few responses. Timothy White, he says, how do you not have Reese's Cup at the top? So that is his best.
No problem with Reese's.
Yeah,
I was allergic
ever.
To chocolate as a kid. That's why.
Listen, Reese's is easily in my top three. But All right, a couple of other ones. 303, we'll start out with this one. He refers to his favorite as Mary Jane candy. Another guy said
Well, that's cheating. That's not what we're asking for.
Yeah, exactly. The 200 says chewy sweet tarts. Another guy says, T-Wig, you'll remember this.
Wait, hold on. I need a 20 on that. That's a new candy.
Sweet tarts? Oh, no.
The chewy sweet tarts are new.
I don't know. Okay.
Isn't that what he said? Chewy sweet tarts? Sweet tarts, you go back to the hard candy.
Exactly. You're talking about the three of them? They look like poker chips, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But those are the hard, you know, the old school. He's talking about the ones that, because I've had them too. They're really good.
Oh, okay.
They're really good, but you can't allow them into some of the greatest candy of all time.
You know what that might be?
No.
One of our young listeners.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, we got them out there.
All right. T-Wig will remember this, says the 568, the different flavor slushies from the Jiffy store on 103rd.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie's, what was the name of the Slurpee that you got? It might have been Slurpee was the name of it.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Oh, they were incredible. You did the mix with Coke and cherry?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. They were the best. Starburst has been nominated. Charleston Chew.
Love Charleston Chew.
Yeah, I love Starburst.
Biggest candy bar of them all.
But it's the pink one.
I just go with the regular.
629 says Butternut Candy Bar was the GOAT. Google it.
Butternut or?
He said Butternut Candy Bar.
Butterfingers.
He said before your time. But there's another vote for Butterfinger, which definitely would be up there. See here. Couple of other ones, Red Starburst, Butterfinger, Baby Ruth, Now or Later.
Now or Later,
put
man.
Up there. Redfish, Penny Each. Whatchamacallit, also thrown up there.
Whatchamacallit was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whatchamacallits are really good.
Skittles, handful of other ones.
Does anybody remember Chico Sticks?
No.
I don't remember. Uh-huh. Were those the powder?
No, Chico Sticks was like a little – it's a little stick. It snaps. I don't. It had stripes on it. I can't even remember what it tastes like.
But that's the one that had powder in it, right?
I ain't no powder, no Chico Sticks.
A little sugar.
What no, you're talking about the
Pixie Sticks.
Yeah, you're talking about it had like Kool-Aid powder in it. No, I ain't talking about that.
Sticks pretty good.
A Chico Stick was it's like a wafer, but it was white with like brown stripes on it.
Huh, okay.
It tastes like coconut.
All right.
I like all types of chocolate, but for me, when you really break everything down, I'm going to go to Snickers. I don't think you can do wrong. It's the combination of chocolate, nougat, peanuts,
Snickers,
some caramel.
Snickers is
very satisfying.
That is the Bugs Bunny of Snickers is the Bugs Bunny. It is like the GOAT.
And the only reason I go Baby Ruth over the Snickers is because I like to cut that little nougat bottom off of there.
Nougat is extremely underrated.
Yeah.
Just be careful when you say peanuts so fast like you did just a second ago.
Yeah.
We've got more news that has just come out. Dwayne Wade is going back to Miami.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Cleveland trading Wade back to the Heat.
Fire sale in Cleveland.
And I'm looking at this. Utah will send Joe Johnson to Sacramento, and Cleveland will send Jay Crowder and Derrick Rose to Utah.
And that one's official, too?
Just think of some of those names.
So Jay Crowder just basically came through there just like IT4.
Listen to me, man.
Joe Johnson.
Listen.
Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
They have totally nuked the Cavaliers.
And by the way, Derrick Rose was a nice possibility coming into from the offseason, coming into the season. He amounted to nothing.
But did you hear what Dwayne Wade said yesterday? Dwayne Wade said, I've never in my life been on a team It's not, he says, I've been on a team that won 10 games in one season.
I cracked up at that
quote. And he says, I've never been on a team like this.
Yeah.
And I've been on a team that won 10 games.
Yeah. Now, so
he said, this is bad.
Yeah, it's bad. And especially when IT4 is telling everybody what's wrong with the whole Cavaliers deal right now. And yet he's just barely come back and hasn't provided any defense.
You know, the whole situation with LeBron, going back to the decision, he's been so criticized over the years. This may end up being the worst of it all, though, because I think, you know, the talking point that is now going to come out of this is that you can't play with LeBron James. And how are you going to be able to repair that? Who are you going to be able to go get that is going to be able to accept this role? I mean, it comes on the heels of what the guy did last night. What do you have, 37 last night? I didn't watch the game, but I watched the highlight package later in the evening. I mean, this is going to be perhaps the worst thing that he's had to take on in his career. Say what you want about the decision, but he still went ahead and you know, won championships after he made that announcement.
Here's what I love about LeBron. Two nights ago, they asked him, hey, will you waive the no-trade clause? And he basically said, never. He said, not, you know, this I'm sticking with my team. And then he said, through this season, a couple seconds later. So this is my team, these are my teammates, I ain't bailing on them for the rest of the season. So he's gone, and he'll go somewhere else, and he'll try and orchestrate one more run.
He's leaving Cleveland.
And for sure.
And everybody knows it.
100%.
So what Cleveland has to do is they have to – sort of try to build and protect themselves.
Which is what Dan Gilbert's doing.
Yeah, I mean, the people don't remember this, but the last time he was in Cleveland and folks kept saying he didn't have enough, Michael Redd was an all-star. Amar'e Stoudemire was an all-star. They had a chance to get both of them, and they had a chance to get Chris Bosh from Toronto because Bosh had informed Toronto he wasn't going to stay. Right. So what happened is, but Dan Gilbert wants to know, okay, if we trade for you, are you going to do a long-term deal? And it kept coming back to, is he going to stay?
But that was only because he had been there for 7 years.
Right, but I'm talking about the guys that he could have gone out and acquired. Those guys flat out told Dan Gilbert, I'll only do a long-term deal. I'll extend, but he has to stay. Mm-hmm. LeBron wouldn't commit to staying, so nobody ever came to Cleveland last 2 years.
Let me ask y'all this. Last night they did the highlight, and this morning they did the highlight about, they took one shot and turned it into about 48 minutes of coverage. But LeBron last night hits the last second shot to beat the T-Wolves. The Cavaliers have a record that's worse than the T-Wolves right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're high-fiving, they're celebrating, they're jumping up and down as if they just won an NBA title. I was surprised confetti wasn't falling. They went crazy, okay? So last night was LeBron James's fifth game-winning shot in the last, whatever, handful of seconds. I don't mm-hmm. know what the cutoff is. Isn't that a low number?
Yeah.
Isn't that a low number? Five?
You would think so, because he's the guy who's always taking it. Now, I know you can make the other side that they're typically leading, but...
Right.
I love to compare it to the greats, compared to Michael and Larry and
Magic.
I bet you he's drawn double teams and kicked it out to somebody who's hit a lot of shots.
Yeah, but I just feel like, remember, again, like I said, I marvel at the talent, but he has been criticized for perhaps shrinking a little bit in the moment and then kicking it out, giving others the opportunity to do it because he had been criticized so much about not being able to do it. And so here we are. Just look at the length of his career. Now, this is a totally different – I don't have all the numbers, but I looked up how many Michael Jordan has made, and at least one piece says he made 25.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Now, the way it's broken down – there were more than just – this was not as the buzzers going off. So you can easily shoot holes in this versus that. I'm just curious if anyone else is a little surprised.
Yeah, and one of the things I do when I compare those two, and I do this because folks don't quite understand what I'm saying. It's the same thing that folks do when they look at the wide receivers these days and try to compare them to the old wide receivers when they threw the ball a lot. Back then, you could armbar people. You could grab, and there was also so many guys. Every team had two big men, so there were always four guys in the paint. So a guy who's 6'6", or 6'1", like Allen Iverson, or 6'6", like Michael Jordan, had to go through pure hell to get points because you weren't just driving a free lane. The floor wasn't spread. You didn't have people standing all out in the corners, and big men actually were in the paint. So you had to either go in there and take that punishment or have a pull-up game, figure out a way to get points, and they were holding you on the outside. Jordan averaged 37 points a game. 37 points a game with those rules. With the way this court is spread right now, Michael Jordan averaged 45 points
a night.
It's
incredible.
He averaged 37 points a game with those rules.
Tough to argue with that.
He'd average 45 right now. Easy.
NBA trade deadline still 1 hour and 45 minutes away. It'll end this afternoon until 3. As we head to this break, let's just assume that someone had been in a coma for the last 4 or 5 years. Well, I guess if I say it that way, you wouldn't have known too much about IT4. But just for the conversation, You woke up today and you were learning about the NBA again, and you were told that the Cleveland Cavaliers, in a process of 1 hour, traded Isaiah Thomas, Derrick Rose, and Dwayne Wade.
That's a lot of talent that's been around for a long time. Derrick Rose at one point was as dynamic as they come before the injuries, which we know just completely wrecked his career. But that is and then the other guy being in the MVP conversation last year, and then, of course, what Dwayne Wade did. That is crazy. All right, a few more NBA trade deadline things that are flying out. Back to the conversation with the quarterback, the coaching hire for the Indianapolis Colts, all ahead on Midday Chalk.
Green looking to the front court.
Here's LeBron.
James Petrov. Fire! Ball game! All right, the King. That was last night. He had 37, the game winner. Fire sale, however, today for the Cavaliers. Again, we'll keep you updated. Still another hour and 40 minutes remain as we head to the 3 o'clock NBA trade deadline. Balu, Cowart, T-Wig, Agent Gibbs, Midday Chalk till 3. On this day in 1936, the first ever NFL draft was held. The Philadelphia Eagles were on the clock. I know it's been a trivia question for the years. Do you guys remember who the first ever player?
Or is this the Midday Chalkies?
Do I need to make it?
No.
I would have figured that you guys would have had this.
I kind of remember this. I always get two of them mixed up. Jay Berwanger.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Jay Berwanger in 1936 was the first ever player selected in the NFL draft. How about that?
Yeah, and you think about it, I think the one thing that jumps out as soon as you say today was the draft, it was about, well, for us, it was just a few days after a Super Bowl. Back then, the Super Bowl was probably, what, in December or something like that?
Of course, you didn't have a Super Bowl. You just had championship games.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying there. But, yeah, that's probably what it was. It was probably – it might have even been a week after their season ended. Who the heck knows? But much different.
One other football note. We talked about the latest in Indianapolis and Josh McDaniels spurning the Colts. Here's something you don't see a lot of. His agent has actually terminated his relationship. How many times in the world of sports do you see a sports agent fire a player or a coach? That is exactly what Bob Lamont has done in this situation. He was stunned by the decision, and to the point, he said to his client, I will no longer represent you.
Yeah, he is. Who's the college agent with all the coaches?
Sexton.
Jimmy Sexton.
He's the Jimmy Sexton of the NFL. Not only was he McDaniel's agent, not only is this the second, this is not only the first time they've worked at it, they ended their relationship before. The key to this is Chris Ballard, who's the GM of the Colts. Lamonte was also his representative.
So he was on both sides of
the deal. So he was on both sides of the deal.
And stable.
What's happening is if I put two of my clients together, it's like the perfect situation. And then you do this, you really make me look bad. And the guy's like basically telling McDaniels, I don't need you.
Well, consider it this way, too. If you're the agent for Josh McDaniels in the case of Bob Lamont, and then all of a sudden, whatever year in the NFL, we're having 6, 7, 8 jobs open. I would expect the same thing to happen next year. Let's say you got 4 or 5 guys or a couple of guys in your stable who are up-and-coming coaches or have already been head coaches and their name is being mentioned and you're a general manager and you say, wait a minute, he's rep by this guy? I'm not going to go after that candidate. Look what happened last year with Josh McDaniels.
It can give you a bad name, but I also think the possibility in this case is that it actually gives him a good name because he'll come out of this going, you know what, I'm not putting up with that. If I go out there and execute a deal for you, we're supposed to be working in concert together. I'm going to represent you the way you should be represented, and we're going to do it right. So it may end up helping him, especially the fact that he was from a team's point of view, the fact that he ended up saying instead of firing Chris Ballard as his client, he fired the other coach mm-hmm. as his client. And so that may make other teams feel like, you know what, dude understood from our point of view what happened to us, and he got rid of McDaniels.
I know I'm in a rare category here. I actually thought Chuck Pagano was a good coach.
I liked him too.
I thought he was a victim of some terrible decisions by Ryan Grigson, and certainly he was also the victim of not having a healthy Andrew Luck. Doesn't matter anymore. He's no longer there. Indianapolis, again, as we said earlier in the program, they're expected to interview Dan Campbell today, who's an assistant head coach in New Orleans and was a one-time interim head coach for the Dolphins back in 2015. Reportedly tomorrow, they will interview Frank Reich, who's as hot right now as perhaps he'll ever be after, being in Philadelphia and taking Nick Foles under his watch, you know, the former backup quarterback having great success out of Nick Foles, who's a backup quarterback. So, you know, reports are that he's going to interview with Indianapolis on Friday.
I think Frank Reich's a really good play caller. He's proven that that you can – well, actually, Doug Peterson and Frank Reich get a lot of credit for this. Both of them should, proving that they can go from Carson Wentz to Nick Foles. Both guys very, very familiar with the playbook. But also, it gives you the ability to change what you like to call most often based on the skill set of your player. I think it's a real good quality for a coach to be able to look at it and go, okay, Carson Wentz had this part of my playbook wide open. I could call anything. Mm-hmm. Now Nick Foles has got this part of my playbook where I feel like we can excel as a team. He can excel as a player by calling these plays, and I like him. Yeah. I think Frank Reich's a good coach.
Yeah. I think, too, they have a real good shot because of the cap space. When you look at the free agents, there's guards out there. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot. You look at the free agent list, man, there ain't a whole lot going on. This is a year – where if you don't have any money, you're probably okay with it. But I think where the Colts need help, there are a lot of good players. There's some linebackers out there, you know, no pass rushers or defensive tackle. I think Sheldon Richardson's probably, and Starla Tulalea, the two defensive linemen. I really do believe, though, that they can fix their offensive line because that's been something. Allen Robinson's the best receiver in free agency. He didn't even play last year. That just tells you, man.
That does speak volumes.
Yes, Allen Robinson and Sammy Watkins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it speaks volumes. One was dealt, and the other one was injured. To give you an idea of kind of that little sliding scale of this year versus another year of when you should be a player with a lot of money to spend. And Cleveland's an example of a team's got a lot of money to spend, may not have a lot of players to go get. The Colts, whenever they did bounce Ryan Grigson and they brought Ballard in, they did go after that offensive line in the draft. They made a real commitment to try and – who was it, Ryan Kelly? Their first was either first rounder, I'm pretty sure he was, that they drafted for the interior part of the line. Uh-huh. You had to take over the center position. So they have already realized how bad it was and how important it is to fix it. And the same could be said maybe here in Jacksonville, that they knew that this offensive line needed attention. And they did some things, including getting Cam Robinson in the second round to make it better. There's going to be it's going to be slim pickings along the offensive line. So it's probably going to be a little bit of a bidding war to maybe get that Andrew Norwell from Carolina or some of these other guys that have been mentioned.
Yeah, and, you know, outside of what is obvious around here, what is going to happen to quarterback, to me that becomes all of a sudden the most interesting part of what this football team is going to do during the offseason, even more than wide receiver, for kind of the reasons we just mentioned. I think even last year, or I know that this past year, it was proven that you can plug guys in. You can plug in Keelan Cole. You can get, you can get Westbrook after missing 10 games. I mean, you got a couple of nice plays out of Mickens, including right after Allen Hurns went out. Obviously, you need some very good football players there, but I'm more concerned right now with the offensive line. And out of everything that we saw this past Sunday in Super Bowl 52, the one aspect that will stick out for me more than any is what that Philadelphia offensive line did against the New England Patriots. They would not allow any push coming from the Patriots defense, and those holes that they opened up with Blunt and company were just out of this world. And I think the Jaguars' offensive line was a much improved one, and the numbers support it. They only allowed, what, 24 sacks? It was among league leaders right there with Pittsburgh. They were number one in rushing yards. Blake Bortles improved, less turnovers, higher completion percentage. There was improvement there offensively. But I think we saw through Philadelphia that if you're going to take that next step and try to get to the Super Bowl, well, you need the officials to make some honest calls. And outside of that, I think you need a better offensive line.
Yeah, and getting those guys lined up priority-wise, doing what you did with the depth that you had, but then also maybe prioritizing one or two guys to go throw some money at, can only help this O-line.
That just happened. Brought to you by Fidelity Bank.
Big deal for Jimmy Garoppolo has just come out. Jimmy Garoppolo with the 49ers signing a five-year, $137.5 million contract. It's the biggest deal in NFL history on an average per year basis.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, my God.
137.5.
Raj Mathai, he's a primary news anchor for NBC Bay Area and the sports director emeritus, tweeted that out about 4 minutes ago, that it is the largest, he's the highest paid player in the National Football League.
He's going to average, if he gets the whole deal, $27.5 million.
Best part of the contract is year. The, what is it, 137.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, the point.
How
five.
Are you the agent, Nashville? I mean, these agents, it's unbelievable. Yeah. You know, 137's not enough. No, we need 137.5.
I think it was the 27.5 average. That's what they were going for.
If we could get to the .5, I think we're good.
Yeah.
What a huge deal. And you know what? In what is going on in today's NFL market, the guy proved that he is worth it.
He really did in a short amount of time. Think of what he was able to do. Someone's evaluating a long-term decision, and game to game to game, they become that much more certain that he's the guy, and you're going to put some big money in his pocket. He did it over what, a 7-game stretch?
Yeah, but he did it in 3 weeks. Remember, Gibbs didn't.
Five weeks.
No. What I mean, he didn't. From the time he got traded till he played, he sat for 3 weeks.
Yes,
right?
And then he had the.
Oh yeah.
So what I'm saying is, Gibbs didn't Matt Ryan admit to struggling learning Shanahan's offense?
He did.
And he's cerebral.
Yeah, and he said that, you know, obviously it made him a whole lot better. He was the MVP that year.
Yeah, he said he struggled learning it. Garoppolo learned it in 3 weeks. Yeah.
You know, maybe we can do this on the other side. It will be kind of a fun conversation, give us a moment to think about it. But let's set aside the older quarterbacks, those with Super Bowl rings. Let's set aside Brady, Breeze, Roethlisberger, Eli, Aaron Rodgers, and we'll even put Phillip Rivers in on that list, the one quarterback out of that group that has not won a Super Bowl. But with all the issues and questions that are going on here in Jacksonville as far as what is this team going to do with quarterback this year, if you were the decision maker and you could get any quarterback in the NFL, who would it be?
And you'd have to put in whatever variables you want.
Let's just have a fun conversation. Let's forget about the money. Let's forget about the salary cap. Let's forget about the fact that whether or not he signed to a long-term deal. I'm just saying you're able to get whatever quarterback is out there in the NFL. Who would it be? And let's take those who are longer in the tooth, north of 30 years of age, the six that I mentioned. Let's throw them out. So let's go to the younger quarterbacks. Gotcha. Let's do that on the other side. I think it'll be pretty interesting to see if we have – I think we'll have – there's a chance that we could have four different quarterbacks when we actually go through this. So we'll do that. We'll also keep you updated on the NBA trade deadline. It's been a very busy day. Again, that ends today at 3 o'clock. We only spent really a couple of seconds talking about some Dan Mullen comments. We kind of need to look back to recruiting day yesterday and go over what happened around these parts. All of that upcoming right here on Midday Chalk.
That just happened. brought to you by Fidelity Bank.
All right, breaking news in the National Football League. If you have not heard, Jimmy Garoppolo, now the highest paid player in the NFL, $27.5 million annually now for Jimmy G.
Just incredible, and it opens up the conversation again as far as where this team's going to go with the quarterback position. How much is it going to cost? But that deal averages $27.5 million. We'll find out how much of it's guaranteed.
Big so, money.
Yeah, so into that, and then back into the college football world. Thanks to the Golf Club of Southampton. Make sure you check them out when you're getting ready to tee it up the next time. They've got the app where you can download that on your phone and get the lowest tee times available. You can also call 287-PLAY. Big things going on as they begin completion of their huge practice facility. It's all happening at the Golf Club of Southampton.
Also, Remedy, and plenty of jobs open and available right now, both full and part-time. Just go to remedystaffjacks.com. Maybe you have kids. You can only work certain hours, perhaps. You need full-time employment. They have it all, and they have jobs that are close to where you live. Again, if you're out in the west side and you want to travel to the south side, that's understandable. Okay, jobs there, jobs all throughout Jacksonville. For all the details, just go to remedystaffjacks.com. All right, on the heels of Jimmy Garoppolo and the continuous conversation here about the Jaguars and quarterback, let's get into a little fiction here and play the role of general manager. If you could take one quarterback, and we're not getting into the cap, we're not looking at money, I'm just for the sake of where he could lead this franchise. And, you know, what we're doing here is we're bumping out some of those who are older. You know, the Bradys, the Brees, the Rodgers, the Roethlisbergers, the Elis, the Phillips,
Rivers.
Phillip Rivers in Los Angeles are out. So let's get to the young guys. Matter of fact, the oldest guy that I had on my list was Matt Ryan, who will be 33 in May. So let's begin. Gibbs, lead us off. You, one quarterback to lead this team. You had any say and you were able to bring him in. Who would it be?
Well, it's interesting because his replacement just won the Super Bowl as the MVP, but I would take Carson Wentz. And I know that he's coming off an ACL, and we'll see how it goes, but we've seen guys recover from ACLs at a much faster, much quicker rate than they have in the past. But I'm going to take Carson Wentz. This guy makes plays that I don't think too many other guys make. There are other guys around the league that will say only Aaron Rodgers makes that throw that Carson Wentz makes. So I'm going to take Wentz.
Tough to argue with that. T-Wick.
That's who's at the top of my list, but it's not as solid as it would have been a week ago. And the reason why is because I just watched another guy almost do the same thing. But you can't necessarily penalize Carson Wentz just because he plays for a coach that actually knows how to put him in position to win, because it's sort of what you're supposed to do. But a close second for me is Cam Newton. But I still say Carson Wentz because I think Cam Newton, when he did have Steve Smith Jr., was an entirely different player. He won an MVP with basically a receivers that nobody wants on the team.
Joe.
You know, it's really hard when you say a Cam Newton just because of the wear and tear of the body, and it actually kind of started to show a little bit towards the end of this year. I still look at what I think is just the beginning of a very good player, and I would take Derek Carr. I would take Derek Carr because of the arm. Things kind of went awry with Oakland this year, okay? There's no getting away from that.
Yeah, he has a gun, too, man.
Yeah, but the guy has proven, even though he threw a ton of passes in college, and I always felt like coming in, I was wrong, felt like coming in that was, you know, the old product of the system. But this guy, I do think he's accurate. I think he's got a big arm. I think he's a gamer. I think with all the other things around him, and he's got the 10-year future in front of him, I would take Derek Carr.
You know what? And I appreciate that answer because I think a lot of people would have chosen him if we did this 1 year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a year in which he did regress. I'm with Gibby here. I can't overlook Carson Wentz.
Oh, I know.
I know T-Wig's point about what we just saw with Nick Foles may take a little something away. I still think he's the best young quarterback in the NFL. And if I could bring one guy over here, that would be him. I'd like to see a little bit more in Garoppolo. I mean, he's 7-0 as a starter. I believe he's going to be phenomenal. One that's intriguing to me, believe it or not, even though he is 33, is Matt Ryan. I just think Matt Ryan in this offense, now he's had so many weapons in Atlanta. I mean, truly the one organization that year in, year out, has two of the better backs in the NFL. And, you know, he's always had a tight end. He's had some just phenomenal wide receivers. He is 33 compared to the others who are in their mid-20s. But, yeah, the answer to my question would be Carson Wentz as well.
And the reason why Cam is so high for me is because Cam Newton, Mike Shula was his OC.
He's out now, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine if you have Doug Peterson, Norv Turner, or McVay, and you had Cam in their offense.
But I'm not.
Because Shula's terrible. He was terrible in Tampa.
But look, Mike Shula was the offensive coordinator when Cam was the MVP.
No, I know. Okay? I understand
and,
that. But
and the one thing that I appreciated for what Mike Shula did in that situation is he said, I'm going to go and find the offense that best fits this dude. And that's what they did do. And so and I'm not even going to say that Mike Shula deserves more credit or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that he found an offense that flat fits Cam. And I wonder if Cam, maybe in the RPO, he'd be outstanding. I just wonder if Cam would be more willing to do what Nick Foles did.
But for me, when he was under Gus Malzahn, that's exactly what he did. He read the defense. They ran the spread a lot, and he ran to take care of it. But Cam Newton, make no mistake about it, threw the ball in windows and down the field.
Oh, yeah. He's a very good quarterback.
Yeah, he can throw it. He can spin it. I just think he's a guy that makes everybody around him a whole lot better. He elevates a team. It's like if you take him out, they're like nothing.
One other guy, for sure, he's the nucleus of that team and heart and soul of it, and accounts for probably 60% of their offense.
What if he played here? Just imagine him here.
Yeah, I think he'd be.
He'd have a cult following.
Yeah. It'd be unreal.
Yeah, I think he'd really be well here in this type of offense. And if you're looking at that, now I'm not necessarily looking at this particular offense when I say this, but Jared Goff, we've mentioned Carson Wentz. Two of you guys went for Carson Wentz, and these guys went 1 and 2 in the draft. And I do think Carson Wentz is really what I've seen I like. But Jared Goff quietly could be that next guy that we're all talking about.
I would totally listen to that.
Because this guy, 28 touchdowns, 7 picks, high completion percentage, pretty dang smart. And it proves when properly coached with some good stuff around him, the guy flourished.
And I also like one more, and I'm biased. But look at Jameis Winston's numbers after they sat him down for 3 weeks because of his shoulder. Look at his numbers when he came back. I think the last 6-7 weeks. It was unreal.
Yeah, I was going to say noticeably absent from our list is Jameis and Marcus Mariota.
Well, did we mention Deshaun Watson?
Well,
because he's pretty good too.
There you go, Gibbs. See? I was looking for the fifth guy.
He would be my number two, actually. I mean, I think he's going to be really good.
Oh, I do,
we
too.
We did not mention Deshaun Watson.
Remember, I hyped that guy all the way into the draft when others were discounting him. But, yeah, I kind of forgot about him.
He's had about as many starts as Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, that's fair. He was on his way to easily the rookie of the year and then maybe even some talk above and beyond that.
What about Matt Stafford on this list? He turned 30 yesterday.
Yeah, and I don't – a lot of people knock him. He was irresponsible with the football early in his career, threw a lot of picks. I felt like he did straighten it out, and they were able to make it to the postseason a couple times. I think, once with Calvin, once without? Does that sound right?
Guy throws for 4,500 yards yearly.
Yeah.
Now, granted, they're trailing in a lot of games, and he's forced to pass.
They were a decent football team this year, a better defense. Running game still, I think, is kind of spotty. But, yeah, he would be – he should be in a lot of people's short list.
Mm-hmm.
For
me.
Yeah, for a guy that could play a good 5 or 6 more seasons.
And he's buried on a bad team.
Yeah.
If Matt Stafford was playing for a winning football team, if Matt Stafford was in the AFC Championship game here with this team have made it to the Super Bowl, these are great unknowns. These are questions that, unfortunately we don't have answers for. But I just wonder where he would be on the list. I mean, we've really talked about 5 or 6 different other quarterbacks outside of Matt Stafford.
Yeah, and I think what we have said as a rule is that you mentioned the Detroit Lions. Most people just kind of dismiss them, and it's because of the whole team, not just him. And I don't think he's gotten in the way necessarily of them being successful because I actually think he's improved. And I'm a fan, by the way, of Jim Bob Cooter. I'm a fan of Cooters because he really turned the corner, I think, with Matt Stafford and making him a productive player that played more mistake-free.
Matt Stafford was third in yardage this year. He was fourth in touchdowns with a 29-10 touchdown to interception ratio. His quarterback rating, I know, was in the top 10. Let me pop it up here. Let's see. He was sixth in quarterback rating at 99.3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's okay, the only ones better in the league were Alex Smith, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Carson Wentz, and Jared Goff.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right? I mean, the guy threw for 4,446 yards.
Yeah.
His completion percentage was 65.7. The only ones I can see on this list that were better were Case Keenum and Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Alex Smith. I mean, he was fifth in quarterback percentage as far as completions were concerned. I mean, he's a top five quarterback in every one of those statistics.
The other thing he did is he can flick it.
I saw the dude.
He turned 30 yesterday.
I saw the dude throw the ball sideways for like 15 yards. Sidearm. He flicked his wrist. And the ball hit the dude in the chest so hard he almost knocked him down. It's unreal.
Yeah, he is a really big time.
He remains one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the NFL. Well, he's not underrated because I want to say he was the highest paid quarterback until about 1 hour ago when Jimmy Garoppolo just got the steal. So the money says that he is rated.
Yeah,
he was. But I think when you say Matt Stafford, he gets dropped. I mean, again, we had the full conversation. We just brought him up here at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to bring up 5, 6, and we didn't even talk about those who are 30 years or older,
mm-hmm.
who, if we added that into it, that probably would have changed the equation. My guess is that most of us would have picked Aaron Rodgers.
Funny, nobody mentioned Russell Wilson. He's won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's 29, too.
Yeah.
He'll be 30 in November.
I think, you know, without the top guys you mentioned, those six dudes, Rick, I really look at the NFL and say they're in a good spot quarterback-wise.
Yeah, they are. It's as healthy now as it's ever been.
And everyone says we don't have enough.
And the draft is loaded with quarterbacks.
That's why I think what you do now is you take the approach that Philly did. You take the approach that Andy Reid took last year. And Andy Reid did it when he was in Philly, when he had McNabb and he went and got Cobb. What you do is you
start planning.
You got two of them. Get two. That second guy just can't be a 34-year-old. It can't be Chuck Whitehurst anymore. It can't be a guy that just knows how to practice and who's a professional.
Talking about seven?
Yeah, you better get somebody that you are comfortable with putting in the game.
Because around the league, that even though we didn't mention him here in our conversation, Tennessee believes they have their guy, Mariota. Chicago believes they have their guy in Trubisky. All right. Baltimore believes they have their guy in Flacco. You can maybe start to say, is time running up? Is time getting away now from Andy Dalton in Cincinnati or Tannehill coming off of the injury in Miami? Okay. Yeah. We can talk about that. But for the most part, and then again, we didn't consider 6 to 7 quarterbacks who are north of 30 in our conversation who are obviously firmly set with their football team. 20-some-odd. I mean, what would your guess be right now? 23, 24, 25 of the 32 teams seem to believe right now they have their guy.
Yeah, they may not be 100%, like Cincinnati as an example, but they're not dumping Andy Dalton unless they have a really good solution. But, yeah, I think
they believe McCarron can win for him, but, you know, they got to make a decision.
Well, maybe with him, yeah, but I would still put my faith in mm-hmm. Andy Dalton before I would AJ. But I don't think that's far off. I think 2/3, maybe a little less than 2/3 of the league, but somewhere around there.
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo, Cleveland, Denver, those organizations stick out. I mean, listen, Jacksonville.
The Jets.
You can put the Jaguars in there.
Right there.
I mean,
they are right there.
You talk to one guy and they'll tell you, yeah, Bortles is the guy. You talk to the guy next to him, he may say no.
Yeah.
It's time to make a change.
I'm going to slide to, I wish I was going to Pebble Beach Golf Links.
Oh, I love it. Love the West Coast.
But doing the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am for the PGA Tour. So you can log on to PGATour.com a little bit later on. Check those highlights out. But more Midday Chalk coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. Thanks again, as I mentioned, golf to the Golf Club of Southampton. Make sure you check them out when you're ready to put a peg in the ground. 287-PLAY. Good things going on, and we're not that far away from the Midday Chalk return of the 9 after 5. 2 o'clock hour on its way on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Midday Chalk on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Garoppolo in a shotgun, looks to throw, looks to his left, now scrambles a little bit, still looking toward the end zone, fires into the end zone, and that is going to be caught for the touchdown.
Wow.
Garoppolo scrambled left, kept his eyes downfield, fired into the end zone for the touchdown.
Now, it's a pretty sick move if you remember it. Very late in the year, out in San Francisco, Jimmy Garoppolo in moments ago. The deal will average $27.5 a year. He's going to get paid $137.5 million. He becomes the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League. That's more cash than Matt Stafford, who's in for $135 million. Derek Carr, $125 million. Andrew Luck, $122 million. Those are the top four paid players right now in the NFL.
Unreal, man. Unreal. This is going to last until Aaron Rodgers signs. I don't know if Cousins is going to get as much as Jimmy. I don't know. He's 30.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if he gets that much.
Matt Ryan's going to get another deal.
Yep.
He is. I was reading Spot Track during our break, and Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan, their extension is expected from now until the next 18 months, sometime in that particular time period. And according to Spot Track, they will both get, he believes, somewhere in the neighborhood of $29 million a year. So right now, Garoppolo in at 27.5, but from now into the next 18 months, expect Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan to make more than that, somewhere in the neighborhood of $29 million a year.
Yeah, and with Cousins saying that winning is more than it means more than the money, and if he goes to a state, obviously, where they don't pay state taxes, you know, I think Garoppolo, you know, by him living in California, they probably had to give him a little bit more.
There are some taxes in California now.
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the East Coast and then the West Coast and the East Coast, yeah. I mean, I moved out of Taxachusetts there. They'll drop a tax on you in Boston as well, where I'll be heading tomorrow after the show to see my mom, dad, and my sister and her family. Should be a lot of fun, despite the weather. I need to start heading to where it's warm. That's it. A 1 week in Boston, and that's it for me. No more cold weather until, let's say, Jaguars at Tennessee, and hopefully, I don't know, October, November.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see the next time I'm anywhere near the cold weather. I firmly expect when I get back to Jacksonville in a week that it's 70 degrees plus each and every day here. Because it's still chilly in the morning when I take my kids to school. Don't kid yourself.
That's what I was about to say. What time of day are you talking about?
It's 6:20 this morning. It wasn't nearly as bad as it was earlier in the week. I would say probably about 60, 65 this morning. But I tell you what, earlier in this week, it was still so really chilly.
So I get on a plane in Vegas. It's 10 in the morning. It's 77 degrees outside, right? Fly into Orlando. We land at 5:20.
Mm-hmm.
It's 5:20 Orlando time. It's 70-something degrees. We get in my truck. By the time we get to my truck, it's like 6:30. We take a two-hour ride back home. I get out of the car in Jacksonville, and it's freezing.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, it's cold out here. It wasn't this cold in Orlando just 2 hours ago.
Mm.
So, you know, North Florida can get really, really cold at night in the morning. You're right.
I feel for, you know, the blue-collar workers, those are outside. They probably really appreciate that weather. And I know that when I work construction summers, growing up junior high, high school, and 1 year when I made the just god-awful mistake of coming home for the summer back to Boston, that it would be that way working construction. I mean, we would get up so damn early. We get up at 5:30 in the morning, and, you know, you go to your construction site, and you would have to wear jeans, but you'd have on, you know, a T-shirt and a sweatshirt and whatever, because it would be just bone chilling. And by the time 11:30, high noon came out, it was hot. It was one of those deals where the temperature would literally change 40, 50 degrees on you in a case of, like, 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to right before I went in the military, I went with my uncle. They were connecting a hangar to a runway in St. Augustine. And you're talking about construction. It's dead in the middle of the winter, maybe 40 degrees outside, but, you know, early in the morning, it was chilly. I have so much respect for people that do that kind of
work. Oh, man, it's so hard.
12 hours a day. Just anybody that builds anything, man. I mean, and back then it was like they were pulling that wire up into the concrete manually. It's like now it comes already set, but you put the wire on the ground, and as the truck is pouring the wire, you're snatching it with this little instrument up into. I'm like, man, y'all do this every day? It's unreal.
It is, and I work with a lot of Vietnam vets who did a lot of shutting up and a lot of listening, believe it or not. I just listened and listened, and these guys, I mean, that work bell some days would wrap up at 3:30 because you were there at 6 a.m. You got a half-hour lunch, but these guys would hit it hard, and they would show up hungover and puking and all of this, and then by the time that sun got out and they sweat everything out, they were near death, it appeared, at 9, 10 a.m., and then all of a sudden it's 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. All of that poison has been sweat out of them, and they're ready to go to the bar again as soon as that work bell rings, whether it was 3:30 or 5, no matter what it was. But learned a lot from those cats. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not trying to say this in a snooty way or a disrespectful way, but what I learned was I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to school and try to do something because, hey, certain people love it. Certain people like to be out there and do it. It wasn't for me. But I put in the time, I put in the work, but I also realized that this is not the type of life that I want.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was witnessing what these guys were going through.
Yeah, it's job appreciation day. I tell you that. I love my career and what I chose to do. And I always find it funny. Guys used to say, well, you just stand there and cut hair all day. Okay. When you notice, when someone gets out of barber school and it's their first time in a shop, after 3 hours, their back is killing them.
Oh, I bet.
Your back and your arms and yep. You see him leaning. You're saying, man, I got to take a break. Your feet. My daughter used to come home. She'd take my shoes off for me on a Saturday. Generally on Saturdays, because Friday and Saturday, those 2 days are so heavy, you're broke. I mean, you are literally in need of a serious massage. But one of my friends just texted me, my man Vernell, and he's right. And I should have known this one, too. My uncle's throwing trash for 35 years. He never drove. He's still on the back of the truck. He says there's nothing like being out there at 3 o'clock in the morning, hanging on the back of a truck, dumping trash. And you know what? You're right. I've seen a lot of young guys go out to do those jobs, man. They quit in a week.
Kids can't handle it.
No, they can't handle it. Unless you were in the Marines or you were an athlete and you used to constantly moving like that. It's rough, man.
Well, I know kind of the common thing is to kind of belittle the younger generation.
Trash guys, and you know this from the Mangler. Those guys make money.
Oh, they make. I mean, listen, I talk about it all the time here. I mean, just go to AdvancedDisposal.com, /careers. I mean, if you have a CDL right now, they're hiring the drivers.
Mm-hmm.
They make big time money and benefits. Insurance is a huge thing in our life and great benefits, and it pays great money. But you know, I think every generation before us kind of belittles the current generation. And you know, those Vietnam vets didn't take the liking to us summer workers because we knew that we were going back to high school. Mm-hmm. We were going back to college, and that we were going to further their education where they were drafted, and you know, they had to go fight a war that they felt that they didn't have to fight. And they look down on us. We kind of do the same thing now. I know that my approach to a lot of these kids is kind of that today's kids aren't tough enough to be able to handle doing what we did, going into a ditch with a shovel for 7, 8, 9 hours a day. You know, you talk about how kids are baby today. But that's unfair because I thought it was unfair what they did to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that to today's kids. There's a lot of tough kids out there today as well. We saw a bunch of them yesterday who came in for recruiting. Every single one of those guys looked at us and said, I'm ready to work. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to get to school and get after it.
And see, to tie this into what we do here at sports, that was a good sign yesterday for me. That's why I have an appreciation for sports and the youth and people that make sacrifices to coach at the youth organizations. And I know there's sometimes a bad side to it, but the good thing about it, Rick, is, and I sent a tweet out last night, and I think every kid, every parent, every tutor, every mentor, every guidance counselor, all of those people were involved in signing day, which we're going to recap that in a little bit in a few. But all of those people were involved. But that's the one thing about youth football and youth sports periods. It could be baseball, football, soccer, whatever. Kids are outside and they're running. They're outside and they're running. And what I mean by that is that's where we grew up. When you came home, you did your homework and you went outside. Bro, you couldn't keep running in and out of the house. I mean, you go out there, you don't come back. When you come back, it's over. You're taking a bath and you're going to bed. But kids just don't go outside anymore. I mean, and I think it hurts their physical ability, and it also doesn't allow kids that don't play these sports to have that look in their eye like those kids had yesterday. Mm-hmm. Those kids are leaders, man.
Yeah, they are.
That one kid, I think he's going to end up being a politician or a fighter pilot or something. They all look at you, and they're all different. They dress different. They talk different. But they speak the same language, like the last kid that was going to Minnesota, CJ. He was funny, man.
No,
he was engaging.
Him.
He was strong. They were all strong, and they were all strong in a different way. And the thing that tied them together was football, man. And I love it, man.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe our generation to today's generation is that kids have so much more as far as opportunity. Yet they're bored. And to me, that just makes zero sense. I try to explain to my kids that we would have to get up to walk to the television to change the channels. And we had, realistically, 8 to 10 channels to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And today you've got hundreds and hundreds, not to mention you get on the internet, you get on your phone. I mean, you can do whatever it is. It can take you anywhere that you want. You see those same kids, it's like, you know, and I'm talking about my kids, you know, they're bored. I'm like, what? How can you be bored? You have the ability with Netflix or whatever. I mean, you can watch any movie that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Back in our day, bro, you got the movie they stuck on ABC or NBC. I mean,
four
you
channels.
Had no option.
Yeah, you had CBS, ABC, NBC,
PBS.
Fox came out when I was, that was later.
Yeah.
And you had PBS, you had four channels.
And where I grew up in Boston, you had two channels that carried like the Red Sox and the Bruins. It was TV 38, WSBK, and then I think it was WHDH or whatever it was at 56 that, I mean, they covered sports, but whatever their, that was it.
Man,
you had no VCRs, you couldn't
back
tape stuff.
Man, you bring back memories because when I was in D.C., the good part about being in D.C. pre-cable TV is there were two ABC channels, two NBC channels. One was ABC D.C., one was ABC Baltimore. You got them both. So you had, instead of four, now you had eight channels. Because you when you live in D.C., you get both. You get Baltimore and Washington stations.
I remember as we headed this break visiting my uncle who passed 2 years ago, who I just loved dearly, and he was building his business, whatever, and we went to Nashua, New Hampshire, and we saw he had cable television, right? And I could not believe the options that you had on basic cable. I remember saying to my mom and dad, "Can we get no, we can't afford cable.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, and there's no chance that we're getting cable back in Boston." Had it now, I thought it was a great, to this day, it was the most amazing thing that I ever saw. Maybe outside of the first time I saw HD television, you know, going back maybe 10 years mm-hmm. ago. First mm-hmm. time I saw HD television on a flat screen, I literally stopped in my tracks and I was like, wait a minute. It looks like you're live. It was a baseball game. I thought I was live at the baseball game. You remember the first time you really saw a sporting event on HD? Now we're so used to it, it doesn't even register.
Yeah, you're right.
But anyway, that was out of this world. All right, enough of back of when we used to walk to school uphill and then walk home from school uphill. Enough of that. We do respect our generation today, but I think in a lot of ways you do have it easier for the reasons that we just mentioned. On the other side, let's talk about some college football recruiting. It was all about Georgia yesterday, a historic class for the Dogs. We'll take a look at that. Also, what happened around here with the Noles, the Gators, the Canes. Spend a little bit of time on each of the four. That's coming up on Midday Chalk.
I do want to finish up with one note. You know, I want to call out the Dog Nation and call out all the fans, because you really think about the tremendous job and give them a thanks as we went across the country and played, literally across the country and played, and we went to Notre Dame and played on the road to Vanderbilt, played a lot of games where our fan base turned out and did a tremendous job of support. I think that really helped us with recruiting.
It's Florida State. What are we talking about? That's what I tell them. Because you argue. It's Florida State. You got a chance to play at Florida State.
Let's shift our focus now into developing the players, getting them ready to go. Spring practice coming up here around the corner. And, you know, before you know it, it's going to be time for the spring game. And you know, we need to pack the swamp for the spring game if we want to get ourselves back to the level we want to be at.
All right, Dan Mullen, Willie Taggart, Kirby Smart, talking about the Gators, the Noles, and the Dogs, respectively. All about Georgia's 7 5 stars for the Dogs. And, yeah, the pro days, spring games all upon us. I have not seen Georgia or Florida. I know the Noles announced about an hour and a half ago. Their pro day is March 20th. Spring practice will begin on the 21st of March. Their Garnet and Gold game will be on April 14th. Well, let's begin with Georgia, because I know we had a long conversation really throughout signing day, or the latter period of the two parts of signing day yesterday. But now that everything is firm, everything has been signed, sealed, and delivered, it's the greatest class that Georgia has ever had. They have filled every single position. They are receiving all the headlines. They came as close to winning a national title as any team can come to winning a national title. And they'll play some of these young kids right out of the gate. But I tell you what, man, the pressure on Georgia, I believe they'll be the preseason number one team in America this year, not Alabama.
I think they will, too, is because, well, it's not as if Alabama doesn't have a quarterback. They have two. I just think I think the sky's the limit right now for them as a program. It's an unbelievable signing class, and they already had an unbelievable amount of talent. He did something. He came in, and let me tell you what really impresses me. Because what he actually did with that program, coaches believe when you get to a place, you have to make a splash. Sometimes owners, when they hire coaches, or fans, when they want a coach hired, they believe you gotta win. You gotta get a guy who can win the press conference. Too many times we pay attention to a guy that wins early and fast as opposed to a guy that goes in, breaks everything down, and rebuilds it and does it his way. Jim McElwain went to Florida right out of the box, two straight SEC championship games. Kirby goes to Georgia, loses 4 or 5 games, loses a couple of games down the stretch because he was changing the culture. In his third year, McElwain was gone.
Mm-hmm. Self-inflicted wound.
Kirby's second, and even without all of that stuff, Rick, he was going to be gone anyway because Florida wasn't going to be winning. And I guarantee you they wouldn't have finished as high in recruiting right now if he was still the coach. They'd probably be somewhere in the 30s or 40s.
I'll agree with that.
Okay, so sometimes you just got to do what's right. That's why when you have a lame duck coach, when you have a coach that's no good, I don't care if you're 2 years into the contract, you go find a booster that's willing to pay him out of it, and you run him. Tennessee would be better off right now if they let Butch Jones go last year. But folks are, well,
stupid contract.
Yeah, you know, it's $3 or $4 million. No, do the right thing. Do the hard thing early, and it's going to pay off. And I think that's what Kirby Smart did when he went to Georgia.
You know, for Florida, there was some fool's gold there under Jim McElwain because, you know, they were able to make it to two SEC championship games. But if you look at what happened, I mean, they were rolled in 5 or 6 games to end those two seasons. They were blistered by Florida State, both in Tallahassee and Gainesville. They got just wiped off the map in the SEC championship game. They were blown out in one of those bowl games against Michigan. And I want to say they came back and won a bowl game the year after. I don't know. I may be incorrect there. But what I'm talking about as far as is fool's gold is, remember some of the wins that Florida just barely got over lukewarm teams. So many of those games stick out for me that the University of Florida, I mean, Vanderbilt on the goal line, a chance to win that game in 2016. How poorly they played against Kentucky is a game that certainly, you know, I do remember. Who else was a directional school? East Carolina.
Yeah, they
nearly beat them.
Yeah, and probably should have.
Yeah, I mean, there was just too much. FAU, remember the FAU game went into overtime? I mean, it was just too many of these games where Florida found ways to win, and that's what it's all about. But if you're alumni and you're a major booster, you're a fan, come on, man. You Florida rolls through East Carolina. You roll through FAU. You beat Vanderbilt handily. You beat Kentucky. And they were grinding for 60 minutes. I mean, it took goal line stands. It took a last-second field goal. So they were good enough to get there in what was a very, very down period of the SEC East. And that's why it was so easy to say goodbye to Jim McElwain when they were given that chance.
I really look back and wonder, though. I really look back and wonder. Because of the one game that they didn't struggle and they beat the number one team in America, when they beat Ole Miss at home, I think Ole Miss was number one in the country.
That might have been the best game they played in that era.
And you know what? They did it with Will Grier. So
that was a dominant 38-10 win. I remember that game.
And I'm sitting here thinking that was probably the most misleading win, because when I saw that as a Seminole supporter, I went, uh-oh.
I think I was in Indianapolis with the Jags watching that game at a sports bar or wherever, saying, what is going on with this Florida
team? I said, uh-oh. So you almost wonder, now that we've all seen Jim McElwain and some of the things he said and some of the things, the mischaracterizations of some of the things that he misled people or just flat out lied, and we find out and hear all the stories of how arrogant he was walking the hallways and not getting along with people, did he really do Will Grier dirty? Did he allow his ego to get in the way of especially since, you know, other guys were getting in trouble too and he didn't run them. Did he let his ego get in the way, and is that the cause of the fact, is that the real reason? If Will Grier was playing right now at the University of Florida, what type of, McElwain might still be the coach. Because Grier probably would have been good enough to mask or hide some of the things that went wrong.
There was a list that came out last week. I don't remember who had it. I think it might have been Athlon Sports who had it, that ranked the top 50 players this year to keep an eye on in college football. Will Grier came in as the highest second regarded quarterback behind only Trace McSorley at Penn State. It was Athlon Sports who had that list. That's how highly they think of it. Problem with him is that not only was there the steroid stuff, there was talk about how he totally had divided the locker room. He wasn't working with his teammates. He was doing things individually. He had the Will Grier dad story side of things, which really cast a bad light. Florida does end up with a very good recruiting class. They got some kids late. We were on the year for Jacob Copeland out of Pensacola. They got the big offensive tackle that they were coveting, Richie Garage, among others. You know, obviously they got their quarterback. They made that announcement on early signing day with Emory Jones. So, I mean, top to bottom, I would say that it's not a huge class, 19 players, but it's a real good class as far as quality for the University of Florida.
Yeah, it is. I really believe that Jacob Copeland is ready right now to go in and contribute. I hope the first time he scores a touchdown, he comes to the sideline and looks at the camera and goes, "Hi, Dad," because his mom deserves, you know, a little bit of criticism for the way she decided to handle that situation yesterday. But, no, I think Jacob Copeland is ready to go and ready to play right now. And you put him out there with Tyree Cleveland and the rest of those guys that they have. I really think Florida can make some noise with their skill position players. The key is going to be the defense.
Really?
I don't know. They've lost a lot on defense.
Yeah,
I don't know if they've done enough to replace guys up front.
You know what I'm really interested in this year more than quite a number of years is tailback, you know, across the board. Mark Walton gone from Miami, yet they get this Lorenzo Lingard kid who they love. Georgia loses two backs. They got three more waiting. Yet they add Zamir White. They add Dalvin Cook's younger brother in James Cook. We just talked about the Florida Gators a little bit. They're real high on on Damian Pierce, a kid they got out of Bainbridge, Georgia. You know, I don't think anyone will cry. I don't think the Florida State flip from Tennessee will be a factor because the Noles brought in three huge running back recruits a year ago, including Cam Akers. But I think it's a real interesting year, though, for Florida, Georgia, and Miami to see what those true freshman tailbacks will be able to do.
Yeah. I don't think the Lingard kid is going to start at Miami because they got 24.
Where
that kid's name? I can't remember his name. But 24, he scared me last year, and he's the one that took those draw plays on that last drive. He because he's a game breaker and he's very, very fast. So, but yeah, it's going to be fun to watch Miami and see if Rick could get that thing, keep that thing going and get it pushed up to another level, another notch. Another thing to watch out for, I know we're talking about Florida and Georgia in the East. In that West has been over the last decade, everyone just says the SEC is all about the West. It's Alabama and everybody. I'm not so sure Auburn is able to hold up with their level of play from last year. Ole Miss is about dead now. LSU is going the wrong way. LSU is going the wrong way. The number two spot in that division is now wide open for a team like Texas A&M to make a move. But because Mississippi State lost Mullen, Hugh Freeze is gone. LSU looks like they're moving in the wrong direction and still doesn't have a quarterback. It's wide open now to be the second team in the West, and now the East is looking up with Georgia, potentially Florida, Tennessee, and South Carolina improving. I think that thing is starting to switch a little bit.
Travis Homer's the back out of Miami.
Homer, yeah.
Very good back. No doubt about it. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how I feel about A&M. But I like to see some real early success for Jimbo.
No,
you know, finish second. Well, no, it's a continuous story. Why not some early success for Jimbo? Taking advantage of a down year for LSU and Auburn. So they finish behind only Alabama, and then, bam, those other schools catch up. Jimbo surrenders a little bit. He's back to the common Texas A&M third, fourth, fifth place division when, you know, standing in the East, the West, and then Jimbo flatlines. I'm not sure. We'll see. Only time will tell. All right, when we come back, a little bit more on this, a little bit more on this year in recruiting. We really didn't say anything, believe it or not, about the Noles. I imagine most of you out there would have expected that Baloo and T-Wig absolutely would have spent the entire segment on the Noles. We did not. Instead, we talked about the Gators, the Canes, and the Dogs. So we'll do a bit on the Noles, keep you updated on everything else. Remember, signing day is over. Also, the NBA trade deadline concludes today at 3 o'clock. There has been a lot of movement today. We'll share some of that with you right here on Midday Chalk.
That just happened. Brought to you by Fidelity Bank.
All right, some big stories today in the world of sports. Jimmy Garoppolo finalizing a five-year contract and also 20 minutes left before the NBA trade deadline. One of the big deals today, Dwayne Wade going back to Miami for a second-round pick.
Yeah, that's where he belongs. You know, it looks like it's over for him after this year. Nice move by Pat Riley to go and do this. He was also probably right not to pay Wade, you know, the 2-year, $50 million deal that he wanted. But this is a nice, classy move, for that organization. You know, they don't call it Wade County for nothing. Dwayne Wade.
They love him over there.
Dwayne Wade is, when you think of basketball in Miami, you will not think of LeBron James. You always think of Dwayne Wade.
I think Dwayne Wade,
Alonzo Mourning, and Tim Hardaway. That's Miami royalty when it comes to hoops.
Believe it or not, I think of Dwayne Wade in the Midwest because when I was in Chicago and when I became a first-time home owner, it was pretty close to the Chicago-Wisconsin border. Can't help but think of Dwayne Wade and what he did for Marquette and, you know, the great run they had in the NCAA tournament, being put on the cover of Sports Illustrated, always being available and getting an opportunity to talk with him during some phoners. Always enjoyed Dwayne Wade. You know, some late injuries, but he's going back to Miami. All right, let's continue with some recruiting here. Well, let's spend a moment on the Noles. This team was ranked 64th a few weeks ago after Jimbo left, and if you read all the reports then, it was just how down things are for Florida State and how it was going to be an off year, and it took them forever to You know, just remember the timeline here for the Willie Taggart announcement, then how long it took Willie Taggart to assemble his coaching staff. It was one of the longest pursuits of a staff that we had ever seen. And then really the shock factor that came in before the early signing day, where out of nowhere, he gets Jaden Woodby out of California as a five-star safety. Ever since then, T-Wig, they end up, depending on what source you're looking at, you know, 24/7 Sports had him in at number 11. This guy went from 64 to 11 in about a six-week period.
At one point, they had five commitments. Five. And they had seven, I believe, at the end of the early signing period. With 70-some-odd percent, and I think I heard Martino mention this yesterday, 70-some-odd percent of the kids had already signed. So, you know, you're looking at anywhere between 25 to maybe 28% of the kids in the country left. And they had room. Rick, they got 14 guys after that. 14 of the top players in the nation now. Enough to move them from number 70 to number 10.
No.
When all of the pool, three-fourths of the player pool was gone. And then they had just gotten together and had to start reaching out to get – they signed kids that – they reached out to these kids in December. These kids, they had never even mentioned or talked to some of these kids before. So they did a really, really good job. You know, they got four commitments next year. They got – one guy is Akeem Dent is the top corner in the country. He's committed. He's one of the five best players, overall players in the nation. I think he's ranked number three right now overall. For them to have an entire year to go after the guys in 2019, I think they could have taken up – they could have taken 23 yesterday, but I'm glad they didn't just take those last two and use a filler pick. Save them for better players. Just go after the best guys you can get.
You know, and I love the whole attitude. I love what you're seeing right now with Willie Taggart. And, you know, that should be the thinking. That should be what Gator fans are feeling right now with – Dan Mullen. It should have been, and it was, what Georgia was thinking 2 years ago with Kirby Smart and what Miami was thinking about 2 years ago with Mark Richt. I mean, we're not talking much about Miami now because we talked about the Canes when they signed 20 early players during the first phase of recruiting. With Florida State, though, that, you know, I brought up the situation a moment ago about the wide receivers, or excuse me, the running backs, about how it'll be interesting to see what Miami, Georgia, and Florida does with some of these running backs. That's not the case at Florida State. All right. Running back is taken care of. Patrick is back. You got those young freshmen who will now be sophomores. To me, it becomes about the wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And how many from this group, they signed five. I mean, honestly, you really need about two of them. Is the number I'm looking at. Can it be Warren Thompson? Can it be Treshawn Harrison? Can two of these kids step up and be contributors to the point where they're number three, number four, number five wide receivers? I'm not asking them to do, let's say, what Richards did a couple of years ago at the U.
Mm-hmm.
Not asking for that. Just asking them to come in and be able to compete and do some things early on.
I think they're going to contribute. They're going to be fine. In Willie's system, they're going to run four wide most of the time, okay? And sometimes that'll include Cameron McDonald, who's a move tight end, and Trey McKitty. I don't know if somebody will get to the three spot because you're still looking at Nooney Murray, who's there. Keith Gavin is a big guy. And believe it or not, Matthews will probably flourish in this system. DJ Matthews is All-American, so
I think he could be the number one option, believe it or not.
Yeah, and with the way they're going to play with no huddle, I think you need seven or eight guys. Of all the guys they signed yesterday, I believe Treshawn Harrison is the one that's most ready to go.
It'll be interesting. Again, Florida has backs. I think they'll plug in a running back this year. Georgia does it every year. They lost two. They have three who are returning.
They got two coming in with Baby Dalvin and the kid, Zamir White, the kid out of North Carolina, is like Leonard Fournette.
Right, and you know, Miami, even though Miami has Travis Homer, and, you know, they lose Mark Walton, who was really injured for the most part of the season anyway, they go out, and one of their highest-regarded recruits this year for Miami is a tailback that they absolutely love as well, and Lorenzo Lingard, you know, he's going to be involved as a five-star in the equation as well for Mark Richt and the Miami Hurricanes.
Now, the 2-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill. Waiting in line is so 2017. App your way to the front of the line. Order Moe's online or in the app. Walk in, grab the food, and go.
Hi, Frank Frangie is here. If you had been in a coma for the last 4 years and I told you that in 1 hour, the Cleveland Cavaliers would trade IT4, Derrick Rose, and Dwayne Wade, what would you say?
Yeah, wow. You know what? I would say that LeBron isn't happy. Okay. LeBron, I would say that General Manager James isn't happy.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't. Who all they get? I just saw the two Laker guys.
They got Hood from Utah, the kid that played, Rodney Hood.
Okay.
They got George Hill.
Okay. And then the Laker guys.
Yeah. And then the Laker guys. Yeah.
They're all young guys.
Young, but Jordan Clarkson, Nance. It's fun for Nance to be back in Cleveland. That's where his dad. Yeah. They all got, what they did was got.
Dunk of the year for Nance, by the way. Dunk of the year.
Yeah, he dunked on Durant. They got defenders. George Hill was a great defensive player. Yeah, okay. Rodney Hood, they couldn't play defense. Rodney Hood plays defense.
Well, they weren't very good. Yeah. I tell you what, I don't watch much NBA this time of year. I watched that Rockets Cavs game the other night.
Mm-hmm.
You watch it?
Yeah.
It was an embarrassment.
It is.
I mean, it was Alabama Vanderbilt. I mean, it was. Did you watch it, Rick?
I did not. But finish your thought, then I'll give you mine.
I was in the casino watching it, but I was watching.
Yeah, but it was awful. I've never seen a LeBron James team look so helpless.
Tim Legler says he's part of the problem too. When they break the film down defensively, they say LeBron's not trying.
You know, I watched the other night, and it scares me. And believe it or not, I think they may be the team to beat outside of Golden State. It's Toronto.
Toronto's good. Mm-hmm. I still don't think they're better than Boston. I've seen about half of one Toronto game. I've only watched Boston twice.
Just deeper. They got about 10 guys.
Yeah,
and that's the issue. Let me ask you something about the SEC.
Right.
It's really been Alabama's world. Everybody knows that. But the SEC West has still been considered better than the East. With Georgia being the way they are, Florida looking like with Mullen they're going to get better, and Tennessee under Pruitt seeming better, LSU's looking like they're headed the wrong way. Both Mississippi schools are not looking good. Arkansas is new. Is the time now for somebody? Is it just Alabama? Is the pendulum now going to swing? I got to mention. I got to mention Muschamp.
Yeah, you know what I really think, Wake. That's a great question. We'll talk about a lot after signing day. We'll kind of say what does it mean, because we didn't do the what does it mean. I know you guys did that today. For me, it's Alabama and Georgia, and then it's a toss up. I think
it wasn't like that before.
No, it was. Now I think Georgia's right there because they made the title game. But I think other than Alabama and Georgia, you're right. I hear you. It's not good point. I still don't think the East has necessarily caught the West, but your point is they haven't necessarily not caught them either.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. I think, Rick, who's the third best team? Is Auburn the third best program?
You and I and Mark Stoops in Kentucky.
Yeah. that's kind of the point. So we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about kind of the aftermath.
It's wide open after the top two.
And that's kind of the point.
Don't you have to kind of put Auburn back in there, though?
I would say Auburn's probably next, I would say probably Auburn third, but then it's really close.
But it was like before. Yeah.
Four or five.
The second best team in the East would go winless in the West.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not like that anymore.
So we'll talk a lot about that. Baseball, right? Interesting stories in baseball. Got a lot of fun stuff. Going to be a fun Thursday coming up on the program.
All right. There he goes. Frank Frangie. Their show is coming up right now. We'll be back tomorrow. Put a final spin on things. There'll be a little bit more in, obviously, on this NBA trade deadline. And we'll get set for the weekend as well. I mean, those numbers, we're getting closer to the combine. We're getting closer to free agency. Still haven't really even talked about that Kirk Cousins story. I know it was just one man's opinion, but I know that made some noise on some other shows here on 1010XL and with some other hosts talking about that. We've kind of neglected it because we've been so busy with everything else that's going on. But that's that ongoing carousel that really is never going to end until, I don't even know, free agency? Or does it continue through the the NFL draft, which I think is 78 days away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we'll get away from it until after that.
Well, the thing is, man, the first day after signing day, I was sitting here expecting to have to find something to do and to really talk about in sports. This might be the most unexpectedly busy day that I can remember. When I didn't anticipate anything like this going, there's enough stuff going on to be the lead story.
Mm.
All of these things, the trades and Garoppolo's contract. It's amazing. This was a pleasant surprise to have so many things to discuss on a Thursday when there's really nothing supposed to be going on.
All right, going to lay down a new podcast here in just a couple of moments. You can check that out later this afternoon by going to 1010XL.com. NHL.com between the blue lines. A little bit of hockey, for the most part, Olympic hockey. Yeah, the Olympic Games are here. For those of you who do not know, NHL players not involved in these Olympic Games, going back to the days of the amateur hockey. And, of course, we all remember 1980, to this day, one of the greatest victories overall in the history of anything that involves not only the Olympics but sports in the United States of America back in 1980. So I'll be dropping that on 1010XL.com coming up right now. Joe Cart will rejoin us tomorrow for Blue T-Wig and Agent Gibbs. Do want to also salute our good folks at Remedy today. They help bring you the program. Remember, no matter where you live, they have jobs that are available right there. Top companies, just look at it. Go online, remedystaffjacks.com. You can apply there. Plenty of positions open all across the clock. Maybe you want to work midnight to 8 a.m. They have jobs open all over, part-time, full-time. Go to remedystaffjacks.com. That'll do it for us. Much more coming up at high noon tomorrow right here on Midday Chalk.